Coming up a week from tomorrow, the Biodiversity Bonanza, celebrating natural history collections at UConn in stores. Takes two people to tell the story today, including our longtime friend and the lady who brings me carrots, Dr. Janine Kyra, director of the Connecticut State Museum of Natural History, and Bernard Goffinet, director of the Biodiversity Research Collections. Good morning, folks. Thanks for coming in today. Janine, what is the Biodiversity Bonanza?
Oh, God, you said that perfectly, Wayne.
Just like you wrote it.
The bottom line is, so what we decided to do is the university, both the museum and the Biodiversity Research Collections, have pretty spectacular objects or specimens in our facilities, which are preserved. But then the UConn Botanical Conservatory, I'm getting used to that new name, has living specimens. So we thought it would be awesome to show some of our coolest specimens to the public. So we're going to kind of have a flash exhibit is probably the way to think about it, where for 2 hours, so from 4:30 to 6:30 on Thursday, April 17th in the Gant Light Court, we're going to have some of our coolest specimens out on display. And it's going to be preceded by a really awesome talk, we hope, by members of the National Academy, Pam and Doug Solstice, who have actually, they are coming to us with a talk tailored to this exhibit that focuses on natural history collections in the 21st century. So we're super excited. Like, we have the coolest things ever.
Bernard, good to see you. Thanks for coming in this morning. What is the Biodiversity Research Collections at UConn?
It's a collection of preserved specimens that in part reflect research foci, you know, of faculty members at UConn over the decades. We have specimens from, you know, the early days of UConn being an agricultural college. We preserve these specimens in a state-of-the-art facility supported by federal, grants, but also UConn support. And we have about 2 million specimens from all over the world, from representing many different lineages, and also specimens that go back deep in time with some fossils of the earliest plants on Earth about 440 million years ago.
Janine, when people leave this event on April 17th, what are they going to be talking about as they leave the show?
Oh my God, I didn't know such cool things were available for us right here at the University of Connecticut. I got to see a hippo skull. I've never seen an echidna. What about a platypus skeleton? How about a couple of plants that they get to see the live plants, and the plants are potentially extinct in the wild. And like one of our highlights is we actually have a specimen of a passenger pigeon that we're going to show people. The passenger pigeons, as you know, because you're an excellent biologist, Wayne, went extinct in 1914. And we have specimens in the collection from the late 1800s. So we're super excited about that. So the idea is to show that, like, I think people, they're so used to seeing images online, they don't think about how remarkable seeing the actual specimens is. And that's what we want to try to show them.
And I'm an expert on shark parasites, too.
Oh, good. Good to know.
Will there be any of those at the show?
Well, the problem is, this is a biodiversity bonanza, so we're going big and awesome, and shark tapeworms, as you know from our previous conversations, are pretty tiny. So we're thinking maybe like a 2 millimeter long tapeworm might not be something as cool as, for example, we're going to have a demonstration on how to clean a bald eagle, which is something that might be a little more, you know, bonanza-ish for people.
Very close to my heart. I'm very big into bald eagles right now. I would say this, that Janine and I go way back, and the first time we had you in the studio, you were talking about shark parasites. Probably nobody in the state knows more about shark parasites than you do. So that's why I asked that question. But let's move on back to the big event, the Biodiversity Bonanza. Bernard, what will you be doing there, and what can we learn from you at this event on April 17th?
Well, we'll be highlighting a number of, specimens, as Janine mentioned, and we'll be able to tell many stories about the specimens that we're exhibiting and also more about the natural history collections. Our role, increasing awareness about who we are, also our function. The research collection is like a library that documents diversity through time and space. So it's an invaluable collection. And when I make the analogy to a library, I always say, a specimen in our collection is like a book in a library, except that when you read a book, you get to the last page, you're done. with a specimen, you never know what else it may tell you tomorrow with new technologies, etc. So hopefully I'll be joining Janine and getting everybody excited about natural history collections. And, you know, every specimen has a story to tell, and they're great stories.
Janine, tell me about some of the preserved plants that will be on display.
No, I'm the animal person. Bernard's going to tell you about the preserved plants that will be on display.
Bernard, let's hear about the preserved plants, Bernard.
No.
I got a list of stuff here. I didn't know it was one or the other going to talk about that. But Bernard,
so,
your witness.
Our plant collection, so we have two collections of plants. One is a living plant collection, the Yukon Botanical Consortium, with about close to 3,000 species from all over the world.
Conservatory, and
then we have the herbarium where plants are dried and preserved, and we have about 200,000 specimens. We do have the best record of plants through time in Connecticut. You know, what is growing in Connecticut, where is it growing? We use the collections for teaching, to show students. But we also have a number of specimens that reflect where some of our colleagues or predecessors have worked, whether it's at southern tip of South America or in Africa. And so we have specimens from all over the world that can and are being used for research, because believe it or not, you can still extract DNA from dried specimens, even if they're 50 or 100 years old. So the good news is that we have a lot of specimens that we can use. The bad news is that we can't argue we need to go back to Africa and collect them again. But it's a mine of data, of information that is just waiting and available for students and researchers from all over the world.
Janine, is one of the cool things about this program, the Biodiversity Bonanza, that you've got all this stuff in storage. But now you get to bring it out and show it off and let people see what it is and go, wow, that's really cool.
No, that's actually one of our goals, because one of the challenges is always you have to, in order to keep these specimens through time, and we have specimens that are hundreds of years old, you have to, you know, care for them in a very careful and, you know, formal sort of protocol. But then the balance is, what's the point of having them? I mean, they do have a use for research, but one of our, you know, especially as the director of the museum, one of the points of having them is to be able to show them to people. And so this is an opportunity for us to do that. Eventually we do hope to have a new building. I'm just going to throw that out there. But right now we don't. So what we've been trying to do is like have times where, you know, like we did Shark Day, we're going to do Mega Mammal Day, now we're doing the Biodiversity Bonanza, where we can actually show people the awesomeness of specimens. And again, I have to come back to, we're so used to online things. It's really nice for people to be able to come and see them. And some of them you'll be able to touch. We're going to have like a moss petting zoo. I like that they called it a moss petting zoo as a zoologist. We're going to have some study skins that people can talk, just to see how soft some kinds of you know, mammals and birds are, so that you don't have to, you know, touch a roadkill, because that would be a bad thing. Not that people do that. I do that. But
when do you get this aforementioned new building, by the way?
Well, you know, it's an uphill battle. We've been working on it for a while. Yeah, we're hoping someone will, you know, we'll get some interest at some point. We did have some interest from, you know, some of the legislators over the last election, so we'll see how that goes.
But now, just to clarify, since you do not have a formal building per se, you identify the location before, but for the people that are going to be going to this, be specific on exactly where the Gant Light Court is, where this event takes place, and also what you recommend as far as parking. Would that be the North Garage?
Yeah, the North Garage is probably the best bet for parking, because the Gant building is on North Eagleville Road, and that's the road the North Garage is on.
Is that what I used to call the Life Sciences building?
It's attached to the Life Sciences building. And so it's actually directly across from the North Garage, and if you go in any of the doors there, you'll see signs that take you to, that'll direct you to where to go. The talk is actually going to be in the Biophysics building, but that's also attached to the Gant Light Court. And then prior to that, if people actually want to, I mean, we are hoping some people would like to see the Yukon Botanical Conservatory and the Biodiversity Research Collections. We'll have tours available between 2 and 3, but we'll have signs direct. Once you get into the building from the North Garage, we'll have signs directing people where to go. So the idea is we do tours, then we do the talk in the Biophysics building, and then everybody moves over for the Biodiversity Bonanza with specimens and a reception from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Gantt Light Court. But the signage, I think, will be pretty good because it's tricky because we have to use multiple different areas to do this because it's big.
Who's got the story on the jaguar skull that'll be on display? Janine?
Oh, that would be an animal. That's my question. So like Bernard said, this is a really cool example of what Bernard said. So we got contacted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife about a year ago that they wanted to start, they are cottoning on to the idea that, you know, DNA is a really useful tool for doing things like tracking illegal trade and so on. So what they decided they would like to try to do is go to collections that had jaguar skulls or any jaguar materials. It turns out we actually have a little over 10 jaguar skulls. And they would get permission, which we gave them, to take a little bit of DNA, and then they're generating a database. And since we have, the whole point of the research collections is you know where the specimens came from, right? Like you don't just have specimen, you know it was collected at this time in this place. And so they're generating a database so that they can actually determine where different specimens with different DNA profiles were collected. And then when they have a sample they've confiscated, they'll be able to know where it came from. So we were able to give them DNA from, like I said, a little over 10 of them. And it was sort of cool because, you know, who would have thought, like, Connecticut, we have jaguar skulls in the biodiversity research collection. And again, that's because of predecessors in our department who collected throughout South and Central America, and for that matter, throughout the world. So,
you know, Janine, when you first told me about this program and the booking of the one we're doing right now, when I heard biodiversity bonanza, the first thing I thought of was, is this related at all to the old bio blitz that was done quite often through the University of Connecticut statewide, a 24-hour thing where people would go out and find what kind of critters and other biodiverse things they could find? This is not that. This is a totally different thing, isn't it?
But what's really kind of cool, it's a really good question, Wayne, because the in a way it's similar, in a way it's different. Because the idea about the BioBlitzes was you take people to their backyard and you show them the amazing biodiversity that is in their backyard. And by the way, Connecticut, we still have the record for the most number of species collected during a BioBlitz if you look at Wikipedia. Anyway, but this is, okay, I see the things that are local. What about those exotic things? So now we're in a very short period of time. We want to give people an opportunity to observe things from all around the world. Like we probably have, I don't know, if you look at the labels, we have more than 20 countries represented by the specimens we're actually going to have on display. So you see that, like, so you sort of take that local lens and then you expand it more globally. And this is the sort of a global version of that, just so people can see, like, you know, because you're used to sort of seeing, well, some people are used to seeing things in zoos, but seeing the specimens, like, have you ever seen a giraffe skull? It's really cool. The hippo skull's my favorite.
I saw one with a giraffe around it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, but what does it look like without the giraffe? Right?
Like, I didn't look inside the skin.
Well, you know, as a parasitologist, I do kind of do that. But we have a skeleton of a platypus, right? Like, an echidna, those are mammals that lay eggs, like, from Australia. They're cool.
Timey kangaroo down sport.
Yeah.
Mentions a platypus. Platypus duck, Bill.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So it's on a different scale, you know what I mean? But the idea, both of those kinds of events are to help people learn about and appreciate the biodiversity locally and globally.
Bernard, we've talked about a couple of things that we pretty much have lost. Where do we stand right now with global warming, among other things, and urban sprawl? Are we losing species on a day-to-day basis, and are we doing a good job trying to preserve the specimens that we've got?
Well, I would say two things. On one hand, we still don't have a really good understanding of what's out there. We still are describing species, and for that matter, I would say many specimens have been collected and have been accumulated in natural history collections, and they continue to be studied. So many of the species that are being uncovered are uncovered based on specimens that were collected already, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. So when you don't know what you have, it's difficult to know exactly the extent of what the risk is or who is at risk. But are we losing species? Definitely. And whether it's through habitat loss or global warming. And I would say that you may see a lot of projections as to where will this or this plant live in 5 years or in 20 years or 100 years if the climate changes. All these projections are based on our knowledge as to where does the species occur now. And that's based on information of the specimens that are in collections. So the collections are really central to answering the questions, what will happen, right? We don't know You know, we can't, the collections can't do anything about extinction, but they have records of species. But we are essential to making, to estimate where may the species, you know, occur, or what risk is the species facing. Is it really known only from a small area, and that area might be become extinct?
Well, so we lose species on occasion. Do we ever find new ones?
Well, we find new ones in the sense that we newly recognize them, right? So the species are out there, and the question is, are we able to, have we seen it before? Have we, do we know how to recognize it? But as I said, we can look at collections that we already have, analyze them through, with different lenses, through a DNA lens, and uncover more diversity. So, just to give you an example, I work primarily on mosses and lichens, so which are typically, you know, some small organisms or associations. And in my front yard, we discovered a species based on using DNA analysis that wasn't previously recognized. And so all it takes is for somebody to look and maybe use a different lens and approach and be curious.
The Biodiversity Bonanza is a week from tomorrow. It's Thursday at UConn on the North Campus. Give the hours again, Janine, and what do you think the prime time when most people are going to be wanting to be at this event?
So the tours are from 2 to 3 p.m. The seminar is from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. And the specimen display will be from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. And that will have the reception as well.
And a good event for kids.
Yeah. We're hoping. Remember, this is also about inspiring youngsters to get out there and learn about biodiversity. Maybe they would want to become like an expert on mosses, or, Lord forbid, an expert on tapeworms or sharks.
It's the Biodiversity Bonanza, celebrating natural history collections at UConn and Storrs. Thanks to my guest this morning, Dr. Janine Kyra, who is a Board of Trustees Distinguished Professor and the Director of the Connecticut State Museum of Natural History, and Bernard Goffinet, Director of the Biodiversity Research Collections. Good to see you both. 14 WILI Willimantic and 95.3 FM.